Before I get into the teaching, I'm a little tender this morning. Some of you have heard that since I stood here with you last week, I got a phone call from mine and Craig's big brother, Alan, saying that my sister-in-law, Rhonda, had some pretty severe back pain, and they went to the emergency room, and they have since found all kinds of problems. And so there are some very hard decisions that Alan is having to make. And Alan and Rhonda have Jack, their son, who's a freshman at Harding with my son. I picked him up Friday. I was down in Houston this week. And they have an eighth grade daughter, Gracie. And so just covet your prayers for them. We've got, just put them under the umbrella of the prayers we're praying for ours here that we have going on. So I am glad to be back. It is not, I'm not saying that so that I can let it go, so that I engage with this message. It has just accentuated the importance of what we're talking about in this series. And so I want you to do a little exercise with me. I want you to just pull way back, and I want you to imagine that there's a God. There is a God, a God that created everything. And now I want you to imagine that that God, whoever he is, big enough to create everything, one of his defining qualities, and we wouldn't know him if he hadn't revealed it, so we're complete, he's bigger than us. His ways are higher than our ways. His thoughts are higher than our thoughts. We would know nothing of him if he doesn't self-reveal, but I want you to imagine that he reveals one of his biggest qualities is that he cares. That this God that's big enough that he doesn't need to care does. And he cares specifically for humanity, for the human race. Puny as we are compared to him, he cares immensely. To a ridiculous degree. And we get that in our story. After he created everything, I believe he loves all of creation. He says it's good, that's good, that's good, that's good. But after he created humanity, that's what he says. My work here, this is very good. And he goes on revealing this story as he self-reveals that he cares for the human race in a somewhat fanatical way. And I am not overstating it when you find out what he's willing to do for these people. It's not just some Hallmark card care, polite care, but a resounding, uncensored, unfiltered, consuming, fanatical care. Almost exactly like, there's nothing he wouldn't do for these creatures. And I want you to imagine that not only does this God care for everyone in the world and each one in the world, including you, to a fanatical level, but he has decided he wants those human beings to know it. He wants them to know. He wants them to hear about it, to see it, to receive it, to believe it, and all of the corresponding blessings that will come if they just will. He wants that for them. And so, he cares so much. I want you to imagine this God cares so much and cares that they know it so much that this creator becomes one of them. He minimizes himself down into one of them, just to go be with them, to speak their language, to intersect with them at the point of their humanity. This creator God cares so much, wants them to know so much, that he decides he's going to become a human that he created. That in this history that he created, that he's running, he decides to enter into that history for a little sliver of it, to let them know. And I want you to imagine that he's coming to the end of this little sliver of history. His time is about to finish. He's not done yet. He's going to crown his message with the fanatical part of his love for these people. But as he's finishing up, that I want you to imagine that a few of these people, these human beings, are drawn to him and they believe it. It's blowing their minds. It's bigger than they can ever. It's just too much. It's too good. They keep trying to package it into something they can get their arms around. But regardless, they sign on to him. They believe him. They believe what he's saying, even when it's hard to believe. And so they're signed on. They're sold out to him. And I want you to imagine he's about to finish this up. And those people that have signed on, see, because his time on earth is going to finish, but his love, this consuming fanatical love, it's not going to finish. It's not going to end. It's going to remain. What would this man God, this God man, pray? What would he pray with those few of the human race? What would he pray that they be about from now on as he exits history? What would his prayer be? What would he want them to be about? What would he want them to do? What would he want them to make their business? We don't have to guess. We have that prayer. Leslie just read it to us. And if we can agree that those are just the first disciples of which we are now, that they are the first of what we will call the church that's of Christ, then we can agree this prayer that he prayed for them in that little sliver of history is not just for them at that time, it's for us in our time. In fact, he builds that into the prayer. He says that. He says, my prayer, this prayer, is not for them alone. I pray also for us, those that will believe in him, that will receive it, that will sign on and sell out and say, we're in. Those that will believe in him because of their message, because of his message. So, if we really look at this prayer, and that's what I want to do today, in a world where it is common for Christians, the church, to view the church as this refuge from the world, and it is when we need it to be, but that's not all it is. Where it's common for Christians to view the church as a place where we can escape the world. And it should be, and it needs to be when we need it. But that's not all that it is. In a world where we view the church as this alternative location in which to live our whole lives, to find friendship and fellowship and companionship, where we have a Christian version of everything that they have out there, in a world where that's our inclination, this prayer flies in the face of that. This prayer pulls against the gravity that is in Christians to escape the world, seek refuge from the world in order to be different from the world, which we need to be. I have fallen into this in my life. It's not evil, it's my good heart that has inclined me to do that. Starting as a youth minister, I want to rescue these students, what they're dealing with in the world, what is influencing them. I want to rescue them and give them an alternative group, an alternative place with which to grow. It's my good heart. It doubled down when I had kids. End of story. It is my love for them that inclines me, that wants to keep them from the world and its influence. And there is, again, some truth to that. But this prayer tells us that at some point, when as we grow and we mature in Christ, if that's what we're doing, if that's what we've done in any way, then we have not actually signed on to that God that came down here. We have not sold out to that. to this God that so loved the world. I've told you that the heart of this series, I kind of each week I'm just trying different ways to say the same thing. But at the heart of it, it's not difficult. It's not a complicated concept. It's not academically rigorous. We don't have to go through all these theological loops to get to this heart of this message. It's simple, but it's revolutionary. If we take it to our heart, by that I mean if you take it to your heart, it will change your world. It will change how you operate. It will change what you do, how you see what you do. Your life will be revolutionized. And if it happens to you and you start transforming and being revolutionized in your heart and your character and your priorities as you walk this world, those aren't easy things to give up. The older we get, the harder it is to give those up. But they don't belong to us if we're Christians. And if you'll do that, then it also revolutionized the world because of what you're now doing in it. It's revolutionary. So again, prepare to be underwhelmed by how I'm saying it this week. The truth is this. The church, according to this prayer of Jesus, the church cannot fully be the church at church. The church needs the world in order to be the church. It was Jerry Morgan, he's resigned as retired as an elder now, but he was still an elder at this time, and we were on the vision team together. And for these last 2 years, we're talking about this theme and brainstorming sermon series for this, and he was the one that encouraged me to take a shot at this one. And he's been inspired by a longtime friend of his and minister of the gospel in our tribe named Landon Saunders. He's since passed, but he spent his life, the biggest portion of his life, having left his ministry position in the church that we are all familiar with, that many of us have among you, in order to do the ministry of the church in the way we're talking about here, in the world. And for that, he felt this compulsion. He needed to leave the building. He needed to go out actually into the world, office there, preach there, speak there, engage with people there, make disciples there. And so he's this great emblem, this great model of what we're talking about. And he found that out there where human beings actually live that need God. That's what he found there. And when he found them, he realized he didn't have a vocabulary to speak to them with. The one that works in here just wasn't familiar to them out there. But he had a message that, so he needed to learn to do what we talked about last week and speak human being. And before that, before he even had a chance to speak human being, deliver the message of this God that he came down here to give to the world, while he's out in the world, he needed to resolve that no matter what human being he meets, no matter how they present, how messy, how weird, how antagonistic they are towards him, how annoying they are, how little they connect, he needed to resolve to see deeper than all that and to just see what they had in common. He needed to see the human being. And we're all just the same. We don't all do that. Perhaps not many of us do that. He did that. And before that was even something he could be compelled to unlearn how he does it and learn how to do that, he needed to resolve to let a love for the human race centralize in his heart. He called it, the human being became the nexus of his life and ministry. And you know where he got that? Ironically, he got that, and he went on that massive journey out of the church and into the world and learning all these things. He got that from where we in the church say, we get everything we do in Christianity. He got that from the heart of God. The human race is at the center of his heart. And so if we're going to have God at the center of ours, then we need to have what's at the center of his, at the center of ours, and that's this human race. My prayer, Jesus says, is not that you take them out of the world. Stop. See this? Again, it's my good heart that has this gravity. It's my good heart that wants to protect the people, protect my people, protect any people from the evil one by pulling them out of the world, taking them through that door, that one door, into the ark where it's safe from the flood. But that's not the whole picture. That's not the whole prayer of Jesus. And in this statement, this first part of his prayer, he could not be clearer. The church was not placed in the world by Jesus as a place to escape from the world, but as a force to engage with the world. And to make this point, I am a student of the prayer life of Jesus. It's one of my favorite studies. I've done several series on the prayer, and I'm always inclined to go to the prayer life of Jesus as our model and example. And this never hit me until this week when I was studying this. I've never seen a place in any of the prayers of Jesus except here where he includes in the prayer to God what he's not praying. I'm not praying. What I'm not praying here. Like, doesn't that seem unnecessary? Just don't pray it. But he makes a point to say, what I'm not praying is that you take them out of the world like we, they, and we, we're going to need to hear this. We need to know what the prayer is not. But he did have a prayer, and we should focus on that. It's protection. That you protect them from the evil one. Too often, we as Christians think that the choices in our life as Christians are either, one, be in the church and be holy. It's option one. You got that one, Craig? Yep. Be in the church and be holy. Or option two, be in the world and be worldly. That's, we just kind of default to that. Just, does that ring true in your heart? You maybe never said it out loud, but this just, there's some sense to this. But Jesus in this prayer is after a third way that we need to become intimately familiar with. It steals from each of these some truths. We are to be in the world and remain holy. We're to be in the world and remain holy. We don't hide from the world because we're holy and we want to stay holy, so we do not interact with those who are not. And we do not go into the world and then compromise with the world in efforts to say we're trying to speak human. So I'm going to sin like them. I'm going to compromise like them so that they know I'm truly human. You are truly human. You don't need to prove it. You can stay holy and relate to humans. This reminded me of Jesus' brother James in his little book describing religion. Religion's the bad word, right? We don't want to, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual, right? I don't want to participate in organized religion. And can we just say that's been an earned commentary in some instances? It's just in some instances. Not every instance. We're not generalizing, but the truth is, there is, religion is not ever supposed to be a bad word. There is a version of religion that is pure, that's faultless. It's the groups that do what we're talking about here, and James said a version of it in his little book. He says, religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless. Now, right here, you should be on the edge of your seat. This is an epic statement. What is religion that God accepts as pure and faultless? To look after orphans and widows in their distress or trouble, and to keep oneself unpolluted by that. Unpolluted, undefiled by the world. Pure and faultless religion is being in the world, ministering to real human beings. That includes widows and orphans, but it's a much larger people group. And remain holy. That's the call. So the church is not supposed to be this protective bubble we run away to, away from the world once and for all. It's a place we come for refuge. We've talked about how the church breathes, it gathers, and it spreads. It inhales and it exhales, right? We need. This is why we're not to give up meeting together. Not for some rule-based thing, threatening thing, but because you need fellowship with like-minded people. The disciples often withdrew with Jesus alone before they went out. We still need to do that. God sends the bubble of protection. He puts it around you. And he sends you out in the world protected from it, from the evil one. That's what he prays. Got to go down a verse, but it says, it's how he did it. God, as you sent me, so I have sent them into the world. Now that's verse 15 and 18. I wanted to stop here. I just wanted to use those two points and dot, dot, dot the rest, because the other, you know, that was my point. These are the ones that really got it. But I paused before I finished and I said, but wait a minute. What? This is interspersed. This is woven. This is braided with this other word, this other theme. Maybe I shouldn't leave that too quickly just to make that simple point. What else is here? And so this is 15 and 18, but look at 17 and 19. It says, first he makes a statement in his prayer of truth. They are not of the world, even as I'm not. Okay, so that's a truth. Once you believe and receive Christ, doesn't mean you're perfect, but you're not of the world anymore. In ever-increasing measure, you are of this other place, this kingdom, like Jesus, okay? And he wants that to remain true. He wants that to remain true, even as he's sending you, okay? Then that's not a small task. We are influenceable. If you dance with the devil doesn't change, right? You do. And so you go into the world, you immerse yourself, we become who we're around. This is why it's important for us to have like-minded people. So he knows he's sending us on something. He says, they're not of the world any more than I am, and I want it to stay that way. So what's his solution to that? His love compels, the Creator's love compels him to send us out to the world that he loves if we're signed on to his heart. But he knows it's dangerous. He knows there's risk. So he prays, sanctify them. Sanctify them. What is this sanctification? What does sanctify mean? That's our $5 word. Not a word probably you're using out there if you want to talk human. But in here, we should know what it means. Because whatever this is the means through which you are going to be able to have the heart of God. People are dying. And his love doesn't stop. Sanctify means to be set apart, get this last part, for something. It's not to be set apart from something, set apart for something. Sanctification is the process of being made holy, okay? It's your sanctification is your constant transformation more and more into a kingdom person. But it's not for you. It is for you. It's the best way to live, but because of the heart of God, it's not for you. It's for his love, his fanatical love. It's for the world. And so he prays for God to do to them what would make it possible for them to do option three, to go into the world and remain unspotted by it, to go into the world and remain protected from it. This is not your work. That's his work. You just get to go. Armored up. Protected. You just get the joy of participating in the most important agenda being run on earth ever. He prays for them to be sanctified, to be set apart. Sanctification isn't about insulation, it's about mission. This holiness that you are to have, it doesn't mean withdrawal. It means being distinct while being deeply engaged. He defines sanctification not as escaping from humanity, but being sent into humanity full of immovable divine truth and love. Protected from the world, totally, but totally in it. And engaged with it for a purpose. Jesus uses his own sanctification to show this. Verse 19, for them I sanctify myself, that they too may be truly sanctified. This is stunning. Jesus' holiness, his own holiness, is not for him. It's for them. Your holiness, it's not for you. It's for them. Holiness for humanity, not holiness from humanity. So when the church isolates itself from the world under the banner of being set apart, it actually betrays the very kind of sanctification, being set apart, that Jesus intends and prays here. True sanctification moves us towards the world in love and mission, not away from it out of fear of impurity, becoming unclean. Church, listen. The world needs the church. Early on in my ministry, I caught some teaching from a popular preacher. He said something over and over all the time that stayed with me. The church is the hope of the world. And that is true. The church is the hope of the world. Like, we carry the message. We need to feel the need out there for what we have in here. But I'm saying in this message, I'm saying something. This, most Christians, amen. They amen, they agree with, and they should, and it's right, and we need to be reminded of this. But what I'm now saying in this series, for you and me, is the world is the hope of the church. The church cannot be the church without the world. We need the world. If we need people to love, we need wounds to touch, we need stories to enter, or we forget who we are and what this is all about. We are sanctified for the world, not sanitized from it. So the church isn't meant to be this walled-in collection of lights that we invite the darkness in to experience. No. We're not meant to be a warehouse of yeast. And we protect this yeast, its purity as yeast, by never letting it come into contact with the dough that we're supposed to, as kingdom city, we're supposed to be the leaven throughout the dough of the world. We're not to be a warehouse of salt. Salt, its effectiveness happens when it comes into contact with the food. That's when it does what it's designed to do. And salt can't be the salt of the earth in here with other salt. It has to come into contact. The church cannot fully be the church at church. So, today, I'm going to invite you to do something. We're going to do something a little different here for our response time. Elders, ministers, spouses, if y'all will go ahead and move. They're not going to the foyer today. They're all staying in here, and they're going to just want you to see these servants kind of as stations now, okay, that you're going to visit one of them if you're willing. And this is really doable. It's understandable. It's appropriate. I've told you I'm depending in this series more on my prayer than my preaching for something to happen in you, okay? I want you to do that too. I want you to depend more on our prayers than this preaching or you're white-knuckling it. I want you to depend on prayer. And so what we're going to do is we're going to invite everyone in here that's willing to respond, to go to someone that's standing here and just stand in line, and they are going to pray a prayer over you. What prayer? Jesus' prayer. They're going to pray this prayer, a version of it. Just a quick sanctification and sending prayer over you. And if you're willing, and listen, this isn't a spiritual litmus test, okay? If you've got reasons, you would struggle to go over for whatever reason, there's no judgment if you can't go, but I really want you to challenge yourself to do it a little different this one Sunday and actually respond if you don't normally respond outwardly by taking a walk and just, you can go to your favorite person or you can just go the shortest line. It's going to be a quick prayer, and then you can come back to your spot. Luke got me up here early so that we can sing a little longer here at the end to make time for this. And I want you to go, and I want you to just stop trying to do this ever again. Don't try to do this ever again. Stop it and just be prayed over. And just believe and receive. And let God take you to, he wants that world to know Jesus more than you ever will. So you just be a human being out there, willing, open, radar on, ready to intersect with people, not with Jesus, not first, with humanity. Then they're in relationship with someone with Jesus. And God can transfer Jesus anytime he wants. With you or without you. But don't you want it to be with you? So if the praise team would come up here. And we're going to sing. And you can just come. We've got 10 minutes or so. Maybe a little more. Just come and be prayed over. And sent. And protected.